Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
On a very serious note, yesterday we spoke to Nicola Dwyer from Ballyfermot at length about the amount and the startling revelation that so many young women had taken their own lives in Ballyfermot. I know that just sounds like a bizarre headline in the paper, but it was quite bizarre that in a very short period of time, in a matter of a few weeks actually, that eight women had taken their own lives in one particular area. And normally when we think of suicide, primarily we think of men, because the majority of suicides are usually male, usually young men for some reason, because they feel a huge amount of responsibility. We've talked about that in the past as well, but it seems there's a growing number of young women now taking their lives. And the reason that Nicola pointed out was they believe, I suppose, they have to compete with social media and compete with their friends and have the life that they have, and sometimes don't think they can have that life. And also, it also becomes quite contagious, and there is theories around this, that when people hear about others taking their own lives, that they in turn, if they're in a rut or they feel that they can't get out of something, they feel it's an option because they hear of other people doing it. And that's why sometimes you'll hear of quite a lot of number of people in one area doing it in and around the same time. Well, at the time we did give out, of course, numbers for the usual, for Pieta House and Samaritans, if people wanted to reach out and talk to somebody. We got numerous emails in relation to, somebody else said, by the way, sent us an email about the amount of women in Limerick who had taken their own lives. And also Trish just called us at the end of the show yesterday and wanted to share her story with us as well. And Trish Mooney joins me on the line. And Trish's son Garrett took his own life 9 years ago at 21 years of age. And I'm very sorry, and my condolences to you, Trish. It must have been really a difficult time for you, and I know it's difficult for you for probably to even speak about it.
Yeah, it was a difficult time, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Our son had suffered with depression for many years. He also had other issues in his life. He had attention deficit disorder and different things, but there was just no services there for him.
Wait, right? Okay, well, let's go back to the start. When did it all start for Gareth? And I mean, what sort of kid was he? I mean, you mentioned he had attention deficit disorder. I mean, how did that manifest itself? I mean, what sort of growing up, was he always a little bit, I suppose, down in
off
himself?
Off the wall. Bit, he was a little bit off the wall, and he struggled with frustration of things, you know.
How was he socially? Did he interact with other boys and girls of his age?
He did interact, yes. Socially, he interacted, but when he wasn't in the social scene, when he was out of the social circle, he was a totally different person.
He isolated himself.
He put his outdoor face on.
Right. Okay.
For many years. Mm-hmm. You know, and people all only ever saw the outside face. He would have been quite aggressive at times, you know, and people saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times over the years, myself and my husband were told he needs a good slap.
Right, okay. So did he become socially excluded then? I mean, were people kind of...
No. When he was out with his friends, he was the life and soul and, you know, the best friend. A lot of his friends to this day still keep in contact with us. And, you know, there's one particular person of his friend, one particular female that he palled with, was just a friend, right?
Mm.
And she to this day says every day she misses him because he was always there when she needed him.
Right, okay.
Right, you know, like
so. Underneath it all, and underneath all that kind of hyperactivity, there was a really good emotional, sensitive person in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was. Yeah. Yeah. He had a kind heart.
Yeah.
He was very kind. But he just went into depression. And
What age was that when you noticed that first? Was he kind of mid-teens, or which would be kind of standard, I suppose, teens around 15 or 16 to start to worry about things?
Oh no, he was much earlier.
Okay.
No, he was much earlier than that. He was 8 years of age when we were told that he was suffering with depression.
Right. Gosh, that's very young, isn't it, to be suffering from depression? You'd wonder what an eight-year-old would be worrying about. You know what I mean?
Well, he had, you know, he had a few physical issues with his body, and at that stage, he was trying to deal with them and that.
Right, okay.
But he was a normal, you know, teenager. He had a girlfriend, you know, he went on, he had a child. Like, you know, he was, you know, he did the usual, you know, a couple of pints here and there, and you know, too many points some Saturday nights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yeah, you're a typical 19, 20-year-old. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there were times when you wanted to strangle him, but there were times when you were so broken-hearted for him that it broke your heart.
So you reached out, obviously, to try and get some sort of professional help for him.
Yeah,
I know that's difficult in this country at the best of times.
We reached out to, there was no professional organisation that I didn't reach out to.
So you got on to Beata House, I'm assuming, Jigsaw, a few other ones.
Everything, well, Jigsaw wasn't around.
Okay.
We went, we did Beata House, we did...
CAMS.
We did all the social, local psychiatric hospitals.
And did you get appointments? Did you manage to get to see all these people?
Eventually. You don't, you ring up in January and you get an appointment for May, June, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's not much better now. And that's the argument that I still think this government need to cop onto, you know.
And do you think earlier intervention in Garrett's case might have helped?
Yes, without a doubt.
Mm.
Garrett had two appointments that myself and my husband would say sort of tilted the balance of him deciding to take his life, right?
Okay.
Okay. One, he was with the GP, and the GP said he's very down. She was very concerned about him. She referred him to the local psychiatric hospital.
Was he on medication? Did they prescribe medication for him?
Yes, he was on medication. He was on medication. We went up to the local psychiatric hospital with him, with the doctor's letter, and we were basically told, well, really, you know, there is nothing we can do. You know, he isn't suicidal or anything like that. Right, we said, well, like, you know, he has attempted it before, right?
Well, had he been self-harming?
Yeah, he had, yes. Okay. He had been self-harming, right? Then they told us, well, as a gesture of goodwill, because they could see we were at the end of our tether, right? As a gesture of goodwill, they would take him for the weekend. So myself and my husband could go out, maybe have a meal or a few drinks to give us a break.
It's a gesture of goodwill.
Okay. Right. Now, we didn't want to go for a meal or a few drinks.
No.
Wanted our son.
You just wanted the best for your son, of course. And nobody knows their child better than the parents, particularly his mum. And I'm going to say that sounds sexist, but particularly his mother.
No, it's not sexist. It is true. Now, so he was admitted for the weekend, right? Now, we hoped when he was admitted for the weekend that they would keep him on the Monday, right?
Yeah.
But no. 8 o'clock on Monday morning, we got the phone call.
Can you come and collect him?
Unless you can pay privately, come and collect him. We weren't in a financial position to pay privately for him to be kept in a psychiatric unit.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So for that reason, he was sent home. We done everything. There's nothing we didn't do. We moved, we rented a house in a different part of the country. Everything to try and see, would I help him? Everything. So we were renting one house and paying a mortgage on another.
And what age was he at this stage when he was in the psychiatric unit?
He was 20.
Okay.
20. And that was grand. Eventually, after searching and searching and searching, I was told of this top psychiatrist who was supposed to be out of this world. Right?
Yeah.
So I made an appointment for this man. Travelled to the other end of the country to see this man. We sat for 15, maybe 20 minutes with this man who basically done a family tree, and we felt as parents and my son felt that this man totally belittled him the way he spoke to him. Right?
So you felt after that visit it made matters worse for him? You think it
definitely
made matters worse?
Definitely it did.
You believe the damage, maybe his self-confidence or his value for himself.
Well, I tell you what happened after that visit. 4 hours later, we found our son hanging from the clothesline.
Oh, my.
And that gentleman told us our son was just spoiled. He had no intention of taking his life.
He wrote him off as an attention seeker, essentially.
Yes, he wrote him off as an attention seeker.
And 4 hours later, 4 hours later, he found him dead.
4 hours later, we found him dead.
And did in that 4 hour period, had you talked to him at all? Did you speak to him? And how? What did he say to you? How was he feeling in that 4 hour period?
Oh, he was very angry, very very angry, very annoyed. You know, and he hated long car journeys. He hated them with a vengeance, right? And he had done a 2.5-3 hour journey there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And back, right? So he was very agitated, right? And I told you it was a waste of time. Told you it was a waste of money. Like, you know, and I said, the money doesn't matter. Like, he was very conscious that it was...
Well, no, no, and when you have the money for your own child, you'd spend every penny you have to make sure things are right, and nobody
exactly
cares.
That's exactly what we did. Yeah. But...
And did you get any... Did you get an inclination in that journey home, that car journey home, that maybe this is... We're at a critical point here.
No. Okay. Nothing. Well, nothing. On the way home in the car, we were listening to Joe Duffy. It was very funny. We were listening to Joe Duffy, and... Joe Duffy was explaining it was all about how a carer can get free into concerts in the, what was the O2 back then?
Yeah. Like,
and he joked about it, and he was saying, look, if someone could be my carer, would I get free tickets to concerts?
Well, okay, so he was being a bit lighthearted as well, so it didn't concern you too much that he was a little bit angry about his visit to the psychologist.
No, it didn't concern me at all.
Okay, and what happened? So you got to the house, obviously, left him off there.
We got to the house.
Yeah.
We went back home. I had to go and collect my grandson. And when I left, he got into a bit of a state, and he had an argument with his father, right?
Okay.
And nothing major, like just that.
Yeah, just an argument, Father, just son,
stupid
can
happen. Argument. Well, do you know what it was, right? He didn't want to travel another 2 hours back to the rented house, right? He wanted to stay in our home and Bray.
Okay.
The journey had been too much for him. And we were saying, no, we have to go back tonight. You know, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was about. It was a simple argument, right? Realise now he needed to get us out of the house because he knew he was going to do this. And by arguing with us, he knew we'd go for a walk.
So obviously your husband went out of the house rather than continuing arguing, went out of the house and left him there.
And left him there.
And did you talk? Did you get to talk to him on the phone, anything in between that period of time?
Yes, we got to talk to him on the phone. He rang us and told us that he was going to kill himself.
Oh, God.
But by...
your reaction to that obviously was trying to get back to the house as quick as possible.
Yeah, my reaction was trying to get back to the house, but my first instinct was, "Dumb, so stupid, you're not going to do that." Like,
of course, yeah. Because I'm assuming he had said this to you before, probably, had he?
Yes, he had said it to us before, right? The only difference was, this time he said he was going to hang himself. And he had never used that term before.
So that the penny dropped with you that this time he actually might
be serious.
The penny
dropped this time is serious.
So, right? So sadly you got back to the house and there he was.
There he was.
I'm really sorry to hear that, Trish. And it's something a mother or a father should never have to see or anybody should ever have to experience.
Yeah. And the saddest part is, right, it's happening as we're speaking. There's somebody somewhere doing it.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, right, because there's nothing out there for them, especially the younger generation, right? Okay? There is nothing for them. That woman yesterday, I thought she was amazing the way she spoke about that organisation now to try and help them, right? Right? But the schools won't let you in to talk because they're afraid you give them ideas. You know? Right?
I see you're caught between a rock and a hard place, and Gary put it very well yesterday when he was on, Gary Cunningham, and he does go around to the schools talking to young people, and not particularly just about suicide, but he was talking about the fact that a 12-year-old had come to him last year and told him that she had attempted to commit suicide. And he said when he was 12, we didn't know what the word meant. And so there is an argument there, but by talking to them at a very young age about something like that, it can put an idea in their head. There's also
that
argument. Yeah.
Yes, I totally agree with that. It has to be done in a very sensitive way, and it has to be...
I mean, look how common it is now, Trish, compared to how it was, say, 20, 30 years ago. I mean, when you were a kid, Trish, I don't know how old you are, I'm 56, right?
But, well, same as yourself.
Yeah, I don't ever remember hearing of any teenager taking their own lives.
I don't remember ever. I never heard of a suicide.
I heard one, there was one man on our road, and I remember everyone was talking, and they all said it was an accident, because of course in those days it wasn't something that people...
But
it was a kind of shameful thing in those days, right?
It was, and like, my whole thing is, right, I know, and my husband knows, and my daughter, and right, everyone that knows us knows that my son died by a suicide, right?
Yeah.
But his death is not recorded as a suicide.
And what is his debt? What's a debt by misadventure?
No debt, hanging.
Okay.
Yeah. My son's debt is down on his death cert. Cause of death, hanging.
But it doesn't use the word suicide?
No. And I had fought and fought and fought to get the word suicide on it. I couldn't get the word suicide on it, but what I did fight and eventually get is... Now in Ireland, you can now get a short death cert where mm-hmm. cause of death is omitted from it.
And why was it important for you to have that on his death cert?
Because the statistics, well, for starters, I didn't want to hang on his death cert because he had a child who had to produce his death cert when she needs a passport and for different things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That was that. The other thing was, he didn't die by hanging. He died by suicide,
mm-hmm.
right? And the statistics at the moment in the country are wrong.
Because they're only taking those who are on their death certs as suicide. Whereas yeah. your son was suicide, but they put down hanging.
Yeah, yeah. And I get what you mean. If somebody dies by suicide by taking an overdose of paracetamol or whatever medication, right, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the coroner, right, that goes down as an overdose. It doesn't go down as a suicide.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that. So right? So what you're saying is the statistics are not accurate.
Are all wrong. Like, if somebody shoots himself, right? Depending on the coroner, he can say cause of death, shooting,
fatal
or
shooting.
Cause of death.
Yeah.
Yeah, suicide.
And some may go down as death by misadventure as well.
Yeah.
I've heard of that too.
Right? So realistically, right, when they say, and these are just, I'm going to use numbers here, right, very hypothetical numbers. When they say we've had 500 suicides, right, we haven't.
That's 500 recorded suicides.
Yes, we've had maybe 1,000 suicides.
And why do you think young people particularly, and let's focus on the young people, I think we all know why maybe older people are taking their lives. There's a lot of financial responsibility, particularly in the last 10 years since the crash. That has happened, and that's probably for the increase in men taking their lives as well.
Yes.
But why do you think young people are doing it? Why is it because they see other people or they hear of other, and they believe it's an option for them? Which, by the way, can we point out it's not, but they believe it's an option. Is it?
Seven children, and I use the word children, right, okay?
Yeah.
That started secondary school with my son. So seven out of his year in the one school have died by suicide. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe there is so much social pressure on the young people today.
And where is that coming from? Is it coming from social media?
I do think social media has a huge part to play in it.
Would Gareth have been on social media quite a lot as well?
No.
Okay. No, was he ever bullied?
Yes.
Okay.
Right? But social media wasn't really big 9 years
ago. 9 years ago. It wouldn't be as big as it is now anyway, certainly. Yeah, no.
Right, okay. I mean, every single child in the country has a phone.
They're glued to it.
Right, they're glued to it. And that is from the age of 3 years of age up, they're glued to it.
Yeah, I know. Right? I've seen little kids with iPads, yeah.
The teenagers don't talk, right? They don't know how to have an argument, right? Because when you and I were teenagers, Niall, right? You fought with your best friend, whoever it was.
And the next morning you were talking to him again. Yeah.
Yeah, the next morning you were talking to him because you had no choice, right? Right, and that was it. Right, or you went out and you said you shouldn't have said that about me, and I, you know, right.
Do you know what a lot of it is too? And I don't want to be offensive to people because I know people out there have all different sorts of problems. Right, I think we're treating children, we're wrapping them up in cotton wool nowadays too. I think we're afraid to offend them. We're afraid to upset them. It was all right to upset kids in my day. You know, it was all... Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some kids were called specky. Some kids were called fat. Some kids were called baldy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah,
and we taught the kids how to deal with that rather than saying people shouldn't do that. Now, people are going to do that whether we like it or not. They're going to call people names. They're going to bully them. They're going to say things on social media about them. So there's nothing we can do. But what we need to be teaching kids is not to let that bother you rather than having a go at the people who are doing it who are going to do it anyway.
And you see, the problem is, right, if you are being offended by somebody or you're offending somebody, whichever it is, right, if you're doing a sitting in a kitchen on your phone, right, you'll say anything, right? You know, like the things that you say in the heat of the moment.
Of course.
Are the things you can't take back, right?
We have to be able to argue.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you're standing in front of somebody, you're more aware of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with you completely.
Right? And that is the problem.
Okay, so the problem you believe is this kind of anonymous world that we live in.
It is. Yes, it is an anonymous world. And
And also, we spoke yesterday, I suppose, in depth about the idea, particularly for young girls, and it is affecting young boys too, the body image, which is looking at every other 16 or 17-year-old online who looks perfect on that particular picture. Now, they might be perfect 10 minutes later or the morning before, but they look perfect in that picture, perfect makeup, perfect clothes, they look wonderful, they're nice and slim and trim, and everybody wants to be like that.
Yes.
You know, and that
and
is having a huge effect.
There's pressure to be like that.
Yeah.
There's pressure to be that. I see it myself, you know.
There's pressure to be popular.
It is. It's pressure to be popular and to have what everybody else has. Where when we were growing up, we had nothing. But everyone we piled around with had nothing also. You know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Damo points out in the text here now that suicide was illegal. Sure, a few years ago, so no insurance claims would ever pay out. Well, they do pay out now. I know that, but yes. I remember when my own brother died. He drowned. My mother had to fight to keep the word suicide off his death cert. Now, he didn't take his own life. It was an accident. He actually fell off into a canal. But the coroner was trying to put the word suicide and we had to keep it off because they wouldn't have paid out in his insurance. So a lot of people tried to keep the word off it many years ago.
Yeah, where now, and the one word that really riled me is when I hear people say they commit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that makes it sound like, that sounds like an act. Yes, a criminal act, yes.
It's not a criminal act, right? It's somebody who has got to the stage where they have the blinkers on and they can see no light at the end of that tunnel. It was described to us by somebody, right, that everybody at some stage in their life goes into a dark tunnel, right?
Mm.
But you can see the little holes of light and there's a way out for you, right? But for somebody coming to that is reaching a suicide stage, they're in that tunnel and they cannot see those lights.
And unfortunately, you know, when young people decide that, well, they've heard of somebody else doing this and they do it, they decide to take their lives, that they see this as a solution to a short-term problem.
And unfortunately,
it's not a solution,
being left behind after a suicide, there isn't any services for that family either. There's very few services.
It must have been devastating for you and your husband and your family at the time.
It was devastating. Yeah. And one of the hardest parts for us was trying to protect one another.
Mm-hmm.
Right? My daughter says the hardest part for her was being left an only child. Right? Because it was only her and her brother. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, you have your suicide, you have your funeral, then you have an inquest, right, mm-hmm. Where you sit, you know, we were sitting on cold chairs in a hotel room with 10 other families, right, listening to how, you know, the contents of your loved one's stomach, the size of their organs, you know, being read out. You know,
I don't believe that's necessary, really, is it?
It wasn't necessary at all.
No,
it wasn't necessary at all. And then that's it. You get your proper death cert then, right? And then you'll get a phone call from whichever hospital your loved one was taken to say their organs are ready to be collected. What do you want to do?
Oh my!
Right, and you then have to go through another burial of the organs, whether you cremate them or whether you put them into the grave, or whatever. Oh. But you have that again. You know?
That's horrendous, Trish. And I didn't actually know that.
Yeah. Now, that for me was the hardest part. Because
I mean, you're going through a grieving process as it is. And, and you know, you're starting to get somewhere again in your life. You're starting to... I'm not saying put it out of your mind, because it never goes out of your mind.
No, you don't. You just learn to live
with it. You start to learn to live with it. And then all of a sudden you're getting these calls and coroners and hospitals ringing you. How are you supposed to move on from all that?
Yeah. No, you don't move on. The day of my birthday, my first birthday after my son died, right? A very fancy car pulled up, the Mercedes pulled up outside my house. And my sister was there and she said, oh my God, here's someone coming in, right? And I said, oh God, who is it? I didn't want visitors, right? And it was actually the funeral director, right?
Yeah.
Where he had collected my son's ashes.
Right.
You know, like, I will never set foot inside a crematorium again, because we walked into a crematorium with a box, and I always refer to it as the size of a box of military chocolates. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so when someone dies by suicide, this is the things that the family have to deal with, right? But they also have to deal with the questions of, why did we not ring Mr. Smith? Why did we not ring Mr. Smith over there?
Well, with any death, there's always, everybody, there's a guilt. Everybody feels guilty. I know my own brother died. You know, why didn't I go and collect him that night from the party he was at? You know, why didn't he contact me? Well, I mean, no mobile phones in those days, but why didn't I contact him? I was only working up the road. I could have picked him up on the way home. Why wasn't I there? And my mother then started blaming herself for waking him up that evening to go to the party. And it was low. Everybody blames themselves. I mean, that's always what happens. Well, look, Trish, I have to say it's enlightening to listen to you because I didn't know a lot of the stuff that you told me there today.
Yeah.
And
well, it's just for anyone out there, there is a short death cert now available, you know, where you don't have to cause a death should they need it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you want it for more sensitive situations, yes.
More sensitive situations. But the statistics for suicide in this country are nowhere near what they are, which gives...
You reckon they're probably double what they're claiming?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Well, judging by what you're telling me, you're probably right.
Where if my son's death had been recorded as a suicide, right? That was one more on the list. Maybe that one extra number will be the number that the government need to say, well, we reached our quota, now we have to do something.
Well, hopefully they will do something. And look, it's good advice. I mean, look, we as a radio station have to give out, obviously, and I don't mind giving out the two numbers for Pieda House and for the Samaritans so that people want to contact them. But there are other places you can contact. But from your experience, Trish, you believe the system failed you and the support services failed you and your son.
Yes, without a doubt.
All right.
Without a doubt.
Well, listen, Trish, thank you very much for sharing the story with us. I appreciate it. All right.
Thank you.
And as usual, I will give you the two numbers for Pieda House, 1-800-247-247, at the Samaritans if you need to talk to somebody at 116-123. And as Trish rightly pointed out, there are other services there, the Malachar, Mrs. Jigsaw for young people as well. There's loads of other services out there. But in saying that, it is difficult to get appointments. They're not always the best because, well, I suppose the government are not funding enough of it and the government need to do more. Absolutely, when it comes to young people, because according to Trish, if there had been more intervention and she had been looked after a bit better by the state and Gareth had been looked after, he might be here today and I could have been talking to him and not Trish.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.